Greetings, everybody, and welcome to the newest episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. As always, I'm your trusty host, Neil Horwitz. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. You can always follow me on Twitter at NJH287. Hit me up with any feedback, and you can find more episodes and other great content at dsmsports.net. Really excited for today's show. Really had an awesome interview with a buddy of mine who actually holds a position that I used to hold at one time, as we will be talking to AJ Mandericchio, who is a social media producer for the Anaheim Ducks and Honda Center. Going to have a really good conversation with AJ, so stick around for that. But first, we have this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool will hopefully just be something quick and easy to help you out with your Snapchat. Now, of course, right now, if you're on Snapchat, you are constantly looking for ways to add to your story, to keep track of, well, pretty much everything you do in your everyday life as someone that works in the sports biz, because it is compelling content for that ephemeral Snapchat audience, especially when you dress it up with fun text and stickers and filters. But oftentimes, you want to pull in one of those great photos you already have on your phone, or you don't have the Snapchat device open at the time. Maybe you have Instagram open, or you're periscoping, or you're snapping photos for Twitter or for Facebook. But now, you should have an app that lets you upload directly from your phone to Snapchat. And there's plenty of those apps around, and one of the best that I've found is called SnapUp Pro. It is a freemium app, so there's a lot of cool stuff you can do for free. There's also, of course, some upgrades. These guys got to make a buck every now and then. But go ahead and download it, and it lets you access any photo or video from your phone's camera roll, lets you dress it up with various filters. There's some stickers. There are some memes you can add. Also, text, of course. You can draw on it just like you do with Snapchat. And then when you're all done, whether it's video or photo, and you have it set to the right time you want, you can just go ahead and send it straight to your Snapchat story, just as if you're in the Snapchat app itself. Really good, really fun, and easy tool that lets you not have to worry about so much having Snapchat open at the exact right time to get that perfect photo or video, or to take one of your most popular, most viral photos or videos off your camera roll, off your computer at home or at your office, and be able to send it to Snapchat and really delight those Snapchat users, especially as you're first now trying to grow that Snapchat audience and get a really engaged audience there that, well, loves your content and is looking for it every single day. So give it a shot. Download SnapUp. SnapUp Pro is actually the full name. Start sending some of your best camera roll pictures to Snapchat, dress them up, and work on growing that Snapchat audience, because that's where a lot of fans are going and a lot of teams and leagues and organizations want to be. All right, that's the episode's helpful tool. Check it out, a freemium tool called SnapUp Pro, one of the apps out there, the best app for uploading snaps from your camera roll. And give it a shot and start playing around on Snapchat today. We're going to talk a little bit about Snapchat, as well as a number of other things, as we come right back at you with our interview this week with AJ Mandericchio, social media producer for the Anaheim Ducks and Honda Center. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool, but we are delighted today. Got a really great interview coming your way. Really hits home for me where I got my career started was with the Anaheim Ducks, and now the person who is filling the role that I used to fill and very capably, very ably, and probably better than I ever could have is AJ Mandericchio, social media producer for the Anaheim Ducks as well as Honda Center. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, AJ.
Thank you, Neil. Hey, don't sell yourself short, man. You set us up pretty good. I'm just trying to bring us along here.
Your check's in the mail, man. But really excited to talk to you about all things Ducks, everything great you're doing there. And before we get into the meat of the discussion, you know, we want to hear about how you got to where you are. And tell us a little about your career path, getting started with hockey, your interest in it, writing a little bit, and, you know, finding your way to the Ducks. And also any tips along the way for folks that want to do what you do.
Yeah, I grew up loving hockey, grew up on the East Coast in Jersey, and was a Devils fan growing up. Please don't hate me, Ducks fans out there. But, you know, rooting hard for Marty in the 03 final, and that sort of brought me in. It was going to games with my dad and watching the sport and getting up close to it. And I used to go in the driveway and shoot pucks at the net. And you know, it just kind of started the love there. And so I always knew I wanted to do something in hockey. The first dream was to go on ESPN and shut down Barry Melrose. Barry Melrose is still alive and well, so I haven't achieved that yet. But You know, I just throughout undergrad, I got my my degree in broadcast communication from the University of Scranton, which was a great university, but didn't really set me up for where I need to go. Took about a year off after that, went and did some teaching, and you know, kind of got away from the media in general. Hopped back in, went to Syracuse University, proud Orangeman here.
Not bad.
Now my master's in broadcast and digital journalism, and while I was there, I worked for the Syracuse Crunch, who at the time were affiliated with the Ducks. Kind of kept my contacts open there, saw on Teamwork Online, which the first biggest tip for anybody listening who's not in the sports industry and wants to get in, Teamwork Online is the place to look for sports jobs. And they have everything. From you could probably attest to that too, Neil. I mean, everything from every industry, every sport. I mean, they are fully engrossed. They're the ones getting all the leads. Mm. They're the best. So started there, found the position, applied, and my contacts at the Crunch really helped me out. Got a call from a man we know well, Adam Brady, and from there kind of took off. So
let's step back, AJ. Obviously, you developed some great skills along the way to get the opportunity with the Crunch, and even to obviously going to Syracuse and in the great school they have there. So while you were at Scranton and knowing you wanted to, you know, be in hockey in some way, were you working for the paper there? Were you writing on your own? Were you just practicing broadcasting? How do you sort of go about developing the skills to really make that dream a reality?
Yeah, I loved writing growing up. I had a position on the high school newspaper. I was an editor-in-chief of the high school newspaper, so that kind of made sense once I transitioned to Scranton to do the same thing. Ended up covering the hockey team there, the club team, as well as playing a little bit as well for a roller hockey team, which was way cheaper, which is why I pursued it. And then I had a twice weekly sports radio show with a friend of mine. So still have the tapes. They're terrible, but it was a great time. It was great to learn sort of the ins and outs of putting together a show and how you stack that and how you really attack breaking down some key issues. And so those couple of things really got me focused on where I wanted to go in terms of being on camera. I did some on-camera work for the school television studio as well, but didn't really start dipping my toes into social media and using it for a business sense and a brand sense until I got to Syracuse. That's when, you know, and even then, we're talking maybe 4 years ago, and it still wasn't as big as it is today. It still wasn't pushed as much as it is today, but when you go there, you know, they would say to you, as a reporter, you might want to tweet out where you are, or you might want to tweet out, you know, what the score is if you're covering a game at a high school. So it started with little things like that. And then, you know, the Crunch were very hesitant to get into social media. I tried to push them with all my might to do it and then take it over. But, you know, we stayed out of it my first year there. But that was really where I took that ability to break down the news and information in front of me and put it out there in a way that would be interesting in a tweet. And that's where I think I really started getting my first interest in social media and learning how to use it to not only better myself, but to build my own brand, to show that I had that knowledge, that people could follow me for smart opinions, for stats on the Crunch, for anything else. And they would know that it was somebody who was speaking from a position of power, not just, you know, some random person who was just putting out opinions.
Oh, and I do love how you can continue to do that with the Ducks too, and that there's value to not just following the team account, of course, but even following you and as well as your colleague and my buddy Kyle Shahara. You guys are a great, you know, supplement and second screen experience as well. But let's talk about how you sort of then transitioned into the role with Ducks and Honda Center. With the Crunch, were you more embedded with the PR team? Were you seen as sort of a branch of that? And or I mean, was it sort of all-encompassing because of the smaller unit there? And then how did that differ or become a similar place with the Ducks?
Yeah, the Crunch in minor league hockey is fantastic. And if you have any listeners out there who are in college right now or looking to get a first job in the sports field, minors are a great way to go because you get involved with everything. I was the broadcast intern at the Crunch, but on any given day, I was selling tickets. I, you know, was putting together all the PR packets. I was setting up the press box. I was doing some marketing and sitting in on marketing meetings and giving my opinion on that. I even dressed as Al the Ice Girl one time, stood out on the corner to try and sell tickets for the playoff push. So there's certainly so many different things you can do when you're in the minors, and I love my time there. I mean, I think it made me a more well-rounded individual and really set me up for this job, because when you come in, as you know, when you work in social media, right, your hands are in everything, your fingers are in every single pulse of the team, and you have to know how to manage that effectively. And so on a smaller scale, the minors really helped out with that and started to to prep me for what I have to deal with here, which is knowing everything that's going on and knowing it well enough that, you know, you could talk about it and you could even input ideas and, you know, generally be seen as somebody who can contribute to every single thing going on, not just one single department.
And I think that's the key word there is contribute. And you put it perfectly, first of all, you know, really having your finger on the pulse of every single thing that the organization is doing, because it all is amplified through the lens of social media, if not presented as a primary channel. So when it comes to really your role fitting in, is your job the gasoline on the fire and people are coming at you with, here's what we're doing, you know, make sure to juice it up on social? Or is it even, you know, really being part of the idea creation process? The campaign starts and, you know, being and saying, here's how we can utilize social and digital to actually drive the campaign.
I think you hit both of them on the head. We're a little bit of both and some more. You know, there's so many different avenues we have to hit on social media. You know, if you look at our Twitter feed on any given day, we're doing news info. We're doing, you know, team releases, but then we're jumping over and we're helping out marketing with the ticket push, or we're, mm-hmm. you know, making sure that we're hitting some sort of CR effort. There's so many different things that we drive and we have the ability to uniquely hit a bunch of different customers and consumers, depending on, you know, where we want to go with it. And I think that, you know, for us, really, when people have the idea, they come to us as the idea hub, and it starts with, all right, we have this great ticket package. How are we going to get social media involved, and how can they sell it? And that's really, you know, where we've seen our position and our stock with those different departments start rising, because they know now, and people are starting to realize now, hey, we can't just throw something on social's desk that says, this is what we're doing. We're not going to customize it for you. You have to do it this way. Now we're starting to take a look at, hey, you know, we want to sell this ticket package, but where do we want to sell it? What points do we want to hit? You know, what target demographic are we looking for? And that helps us out, because, you know, somebody might do a buy one, get one free deal on Twitter because it's a little bit less expensive and they know that they can get a better bang for their buck. But when we're seeing, you know, you're hopping onto Facebook and we're seeing maybe an older crowd there, we're thinking, hey, maybe we should do a specific targeted campaign to look for some people who may be CEOs of companies, may have a higher social standing, may have a little bit more money. Maybe we can sell them on a suite. So it's important to, you know, for them to come to us and really give us the opportunity to get our fingerprints on it early. You know, it doesn't happen all the time, unfortunately, but you know, it's good when the departments, different departments, especially marketing and ticketing and those where you're trying to sell product, come to us early so that we know that we're putting out something that people want to interact with, right? Because that's the big thing. Yeah. We want people interacting with us. You know, we don't always want to do some ticket push because then nobody's going to pay attention to us.
And there's so many different directions we can go with this. I guess first off, just in brief, how does it actually play out in real life? Is it a matter of just having a recurring meeting, you know, every other day, every week, to make sure that you guys are touching base, or just always saying, hey, my door is open, anytime something's happening, make sure that we know about it here on the social side?
I started like that. I really had that open door policy, and I think people respected it, but it didn't lead to me getting enough information. So my meeting attendance rate has skyrocketed in the last year and a half. I try and go to every department's meeting, just sit in, even if it's for 10, 15 minutes, figure out what their big ideas are and if they need me to do anything. And then from there, I'm back at my desk and thinking about ways that we can work it in. You know, it's a little more of my time that I'm giving up. You know, I might lose 10 minutes to go check out a good DigiDay article or read something fun on Deadspin. But, you know, I'm that much more informed and I'm keeping my ear to the ground and knowing what's going on, then that's, you know, the best way to do it. And obviously that might be different in every other company, but with us, it's easy just for me to pop into a meeting and really get that face to face with them and remind them, be that physical reminder, hey, what do we need to do for social too?
Definitely a very good organization there, where everyone does, you know, see themselves on an equal playing field to be able to work together. But I guess I know it's probably, you know, preaching to the choir here, in that you probably have especially when it comes to the social media audience, a better knowledge and a finger on the pulse of who that audience is, how they react to things, what kind of messaging hits hard with them, what kind of content they want, even which players are best to you know, mention around things. So how do you kind of internalize or even seek to externalize all the information so that when campaigns are being planned, when ticket packs are being put together, when email marketing campaigns are even just designed, that everything you know is at least somehow trying to infiltrate everything else that's going on in the organization for the better.
For sure. I mean, the fun thing is that our audience has changed over the last 3+ years I've been overseeing our social media. You know, it used to be a much more conservative crowd, both in Honda Center with our fan base and on social media. And since then, we've started developing a more younger crowd. We have a more aggressive fan base, especially on social media. And those things are, it's great because it easily helps us capture that passion of Ducks hockey, right? And that's what I think we're really trying to start selling now, is that look at all these people, look at how passionate they are about this team. You know, it doesn't matter what the team up the five is doing. It doesn't matter what an original six franchise is doing. These fans are taking Ducks hockey. They're making it their own. And that's the sense that I've really gotten, especially this year. You know, when with the team starting the way it did, a lot of fans rallied around it and almost said, hey, this is our team. We're behind our team 100%. And so our big push now this year is this dedication theme. It's, you know, hey, we're dedicated to the cause. You're dedicated as fans. You know, we're going to do this together. And that it helps to give different departments that and say, hey, you know, marketing, this dedication theme, it's really working. We're really hitting the strong. How can we make sure that we're putting things into this that we can be sellable assets? We can give to, you know, to people to consume and purchase, but continues this theme that, hey, we feel that we're dedicated because of this. And it is, it's interesting to go in there and, you know, you might have a department think one thing completely, and then we will throw out this idea because of what we're seeing on social media. And they're like, oh, you know what? That's a really good idea. We should switch it up and maybe incorporate some of those aspects in. So, yeah, I mean, you've got to tailor the content, right? If your fans are super dedicated, but it's a more younger crowd, and you're on Twitter posting, you know, grammatical sentences and being very, you know, proper, they're going to say, "What are you doing? I'm not going to read this. Like, this isn't what I want." You know, they want emojis and GIFs, and like a bunch of crazy, you know, silly things where we're like calling out other people. Like, they love that stuff, and so you tailor it to a certain extent. You know, obviously you always got to think what would Henry Samueli say if he logged onto our Twitter feed. So you want to make sure you're being careful. But again, yeah, you got to tailor the content, you know, try and fit your content into how the fan base is going to react to it.
Certainly. It comes down to knowing what works for the platform and what works for your fan base. And like I said, I mean, as much time as PR can study and spend time going through clips, there's no one closer and listening more often than someone in your position. And it sounds like you take that seriously and so do your colleagues, which is great.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you're living with it every day and you're seeing the fan base react to it every day, there are certainly times you can get drawn into it, which is one of the things you all learn to take a step back sometimes and remember, fan is short for fanatic. But yeah, if you can capture that, that's gold. That's the social media gold.
Especially when you go from a President's Trophy to starting off really tough and now bouncing back. I'm sure it's been a roller coaster for the last 6 months for you.
Certainly.
Yeah, but keep it fun. But let's talk briefly about how, you know, the sort of traditional marketing does come into play. Or, no, I guess traditional is the wrong word, but I guess the ones who are setting the budgets, who are setting the ad spend. How does the social team work there? I mean, obviously, I see the Ducks do some paid social, some paid digital, of course. So how are you creating, you know, posts for them to promote in Power Editor, or are you just sort of guiding the way a little bit, or just helping out? How does that work for the Anaheim Ducks at least?
Yeah, we've really started to dip our toes into it a little bit, and we haven't done anything crazy with a paid campaign. But the best example I can give is earlier, right around when the preseason started, we wanted to really get in on LinkedIn and Facebook and try and sell some suites, find some different leads to generate some leads and possibly generate some sales. So that was me working with the marketing team, specifically with the digital marketing team. Your former colleague Trent in Arizona, and also one of the other guys. You know, really, we all sat down in a room. We said, "All right, well, what do we want to do, and how do we want to do this?" And it's the first time I'd sat back and really thought about a deep targeted campaign, both on Facebook and LinkedIn, right? I mean, a lot of teams don't take advantage of it the way they should. Personally, you know, I think we can do a better job on LinkedIn as well. And it was really kind of eye-opening, the different abilities and things you can do and the way that you can almost hyper-target individuals. So a lot of what we'll do on the digital marketing side is that, right? We're going to take a look and see, all right, we have this campaign. We here's what we expect, and here's who we're expecting to hit. And then what we'll generally do is we'll go in and we'll go through like a Facebook targeted campaign, or we'll do something on LinkedIn. And that's where we'll look to grow our user base. Now on the digital marketing side, they kind of exclude me from that stuff a little bit. So they're not really leveraging our social media, which, you know, we've talked, and I think that that's an avenue we need to explore as well. But the digital marketing side will go way deeper in a bunch of different campaigns. You know, they've got 18 million different things on how to, you know, backtrack and hit people who've been to the website once and almost bought tickets but didn't and do all that stuff. So I'm just starting to kind of get in with them now to learn about how to do that. And, you know, the way our company breaks down, that's so much more of a marketing initiative than that's been made a social media initiative. But there are other teams in the league, and Arizona, one of them, that, you know, their social media person is right involved with their marketing department. So they're having a big hand in digital marketing, whereas my digital marketing is purely on the social side, and they're kind of taking care of all those fun email campaigns and everything else, which, you know, that's where the spend is going right now. But I'd like to bring some spend over to our side. I think we can do some really cool stuff, and I'm starting to put together some plans right now and hopefully crack open a few dollars in the budget for that.
I love it. I'll keep an eye on my news feed for some retargeted ads, perhaps, or some promoted posts.
There you go.
For anyone listening that thinks running social media for a professional sports team is just sending out memes and emojis and GIFs, they are definitely mistaken after listening to the last few minutes here with you, AJ.
Yeah. I wish it was so easy.
So how much has the learning curve, or the importance, I guess, of an understanding of metrics and data, and even just knowing, you know, which days or which posts did the best on social, let alone the more nitty gritty and granular stuff about, you know, conversions from clicks and all that kind of stuff. But has that become an ever more important part for you? And how have you gone about trying to sort of teach yourself?
Oh, for sure. I mean, everybody is worried about the ROI, right? Everybody wants to know, what are we paying this guy for? What is he doing? What does he bring to this company? And so, you know, it's so tough because you can't put the quantitative measurements on it most of the time, unless you're doing a targeted ad campaign or something else. You can't say, you know, hey, I sent out this tweet, and because of this, you know, we had $100 spent in the team store, because that's just not how social media works. You know, it's not going to show that tangible evidence. So one of the big things that I continually try to engross myself in is sort of that qualitative reasoning, that showing how through our posts, through our content, through everything that we do, we're growing a fan base that has the potential to spend a whole bunch of money if they're coming to Honda Center, if they're buying merchandise online, or you know, they're doing one of those things. And that's obviously the more difficult of the two to prove, right? Everybody likes hard numbers, but you know, it's certainly been something that I've had to learn, and I learn every day. And I think that's the best part of this job, is that, you know, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, we didn't know that Snapchat was going to take off the way it did. You know, we didn't know that Periscope was going to come in and usurp Meerkat and become the live Twitter streaming service, you know, and give us great video that we can use. And so you get these different things every day, and you know, maybe you can forecast on the horizon, but when you take a look at social media, it just changes so much day to day, year to year. It's not going to be the same this time next year that it is right now. And it's interesting. It's fantastic. And, you know, you have to learn. You have to continue to evolve. And, you know, my strategy changes every 6 months, if not sooner, because we're taking a look at, all right, we're on this dedication theme, right? Well, obviously what we did 6 months ago isn't going to get the people excited. What can we do now? How can we make them more dedicated? How can we, you know, make them feel that passion again and continue to keep it burning? And you can't keep doing the same things over and over again. You know, it's not the traditional marketing. You can't show the same commercials and do the same things, because people aren't going to tune in anymore. And while a lot of our stuff is built up on the good content basis, you know, giving out that interesting content, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, we're serving our fans first and foremost. We're giving them what they want. We're giving them what they want to interact with, because if we're not interacting with them, then what are we doing? You know, we're not doing it right.
Oh man, I'm glad that I'm not in your position anymore, because you're making my head explode with all these. You're having to keep up with all the platforms. You have Meerkat one day, Periscope, Facebook Live, and obviously trying to keep campaigns fresh constantly, content and presentation. I don't know how you handle it all, but I'm glad you do.
Yeah, Facebook Live on your you mentioned right now. If anybody's listening from there on Facebook, how about you get us get the Anaheim Ducks set up with that? Let's experiment with it a little bit.
Hey, I'll put you in touch with a friend of mine. Let's make it happen. Right here on Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast, we're going to make it happen.
There we go.
We're having a great conversation with AJ Mandariccio. He's social media producer for the Anaheim Ducks. I did want to sort of
let's take a step back and look at how a campaign gets started, how it's executed. Something that I was really impressed with yourself and the marketing team there, really seemed like an organization-wide effort, was the Painted Orange campaign. And I really think it speaks to a little bit of what you were going into before, too, about how you are really engaging that younger audience and showing maybe it's not a direct ticket sale or a merchandise sale, but you know the amount of fan-generated content, the amount of conversation, and really the growth of a community of super fans that are going to be spending more money today and as well as tomorrow. So tell me a little about how Painted Orange was conceived, why it was conceived the way it was, and then how you guys went about sort of executing and measuring its success.
Sure, yeah. It was actually shot in the dark by me, to be honest. When we had the outdoor game here a couple of years ago, I was trying to think of some way that we can get our fans to represent a Dodger Stadium. As you know, you've been involved in the Ducks-Kings rivalry, both as a fan and as somebody who works for the organization. And one of the great things about Kings fans, if I can stomach giving them a compliment, is that you know they show up and they show up and they're loud and they're wearing their jerseys and they're proud. They're going to let you know that hey, we're Kings fans. We're not ashamed of it. And I wanted our fans to be the same way on this momentous occasion, the first outdoor hockey game in Southern California. I didn't want our fans sitting there and being in the background. I wanted them in the foreground. I wanted to give them something that would make them active and really make them, stand up and say, hey, we are Ducks fans. And so when we got that orange jersey, it just kind of clicked in my head. Hey, what if we did something really fun? We did, something on this orange theme. And the Toronto Maple Leafs actually helped out a little bit. They did a similar campaign where they were encouraging their fans to do something with the color blue. And I saw what they were doing and I said, this is good, but we can do this so much better. So we instituted it for the outdoor game. We came up with hashtag Painted Orange, and that was our goal, right? Paint Dodger Stadium orange. Come out and be loud and support the team. And I was surprised. I didn't think it was going to take off, and it ended up being a huge success. Everybody came out wearing the orange jerseys. Our team, our fans, everybody was just loud. They were out there, and they really let it know that the Ducks have this presence in Southern California. We weren't going to go away. We weren't going to be intimidated by the Kings fans. And I think that's where we started to see this shift in a more active and engaged fan base. And so that happened, and I was beside myself. I was like, this is great. And the marketing department that year, we went to the playoffs, said, hey, let's revisit this Paint Orange idea. I think we can do something with this. And so it's continued to grow. Yeah, it's been, we've used it for the last two postseasons. We keep blowing it out. And I think the reason why it gets bigger and you see more community involvement is because the community is now starting to see this campaign and starting to see the effectiveness of it. And I think people are starting to get a little jealous, right? They're seeing their buddy featured on the Ducks social media channels or, flying his Ducks car flags and getting that attention. Even local businesses we got involved last year, they're kind of trying to one-up each other to see who can represent the best. And when you do that and you invite that friendly competition within a fan base, it only fuels that fire to be more dedicated, to show off that dedication more. And so we're starting to plan for this year's, and I can't give a lot of specifics, but it's going to be bigger, it's going to be better, and I don't know how we can get bigger and better than last year, but it's really taken on a life of its own, and it's one of those things that I'm happy we only do once a year, because if we did it all the time, I think it would lose its effectiveness, right? It would just become another kind of message in the marketplace that people would think of, but now people are associating it with playoff success, right? They're associating it with the rally towels and the orange shirts and the community rallying behind the team, and people are already starting to ask us when they're going to see some Paint Orange stops and Paint Orange events. So it's ingrained in the fan base, and they're already ready to don the orange and show their support. And I think, that had no small part in what the third jersey looks like this year, too. Mm-hmm. We've established orange as our color. Sorry, Philadelphia. But, we've sort of come in and taken that a little bit, and I think our fans are loving it, and they're running with it.
What a great feather in your cap. I'm sure it always makes you feel good every time you see that Paint Orange hashtag or a fan talking about it. Just a great job there, and even better too, I'm sure, in the back of your mind that it harkens back to your Syracuse days.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's that orange color has been following me around for a while.
Just a couple more minutes left here with AJ before we get to this episode's shareable stat. I did want to touch briefly, you mentioned it before, about Snapchat. The Ducks not too long ago joined the platform. It's obviously something that requires a lot of teamwork to really have an effective presence on there. So what went into the Ducks saying, okay, let's do it, let's get on there, and then how has the execution been so far?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about this, Neil. We took a year to decide if we were going to get on Snapchat or not, and it was a lot of research on my end, it was education, right? For some of the older people in the office that didn't understand what Snapchat was, didn't get the possibilities. And at first I didn't really understand the possibilities either. And not in a way of saying, you know, I don't understand what we can do on this platform, because that was obviously there. But the thinking was, you know, how do we engage fans? How do we make it interesting? You know, what do we do? What does our content look like? And so I wanted to take time, because I wanted to let the league and other sports teams show what worked and what didn't work, because this wasn't like a Meerkat where we jumped right in on Meerkat. I saw that, downloaded it, and we were using it within the next day because I saw the possibilities there right away. But Snapchat, I want to take a more cautious approach. So we launched in December, and you know, we've tailored it more to a much younger demographic. You know, we're using a lot of nicknames there. We're using emojis. We're, you know, doing some creative stuff. We're drawing on it. We're doing all this crazy fun stuff. And I think that it took that time to realize that Snapchat is going to be completely different than anything else we do. And we're only getting started. You know, we had Ducks legend Guy Hebert take over our Snapchat for a night a few games back, and he was good. Hey, it shows that no matter what age you are, you can use social media, because he had a few rough posts at first, but he really figured it out. He crushed it. I loved it. We have Angels Night coming up this Friday, and we have a really special guest on the Snapchat on Friday night. So if you're not following along, I'll plug it. It's NHL Ducks, capital NHL Ducks, and follow that along. You'll like to see who's on there for Angels Night. And we're getting into starting to have player availability for some player takeovers. And you know, we're trying some different things, and we're trying to get people involved in that platform, because it is that great behind the scenes content, that really casual content that we can utilize. And there's so many great ideas we haven't done yet. But I'm excited we took the time we did, because it gave us a focused way to attack the platform. And it's much better than I think it would have been if we had just jumped on it a year ago with everybody else.
So does that mean that you guys have to then go into an event, go into a practice, a game, a CR event with another channel to fill and another platform to strategize around as well?
Yeah, I think I need two phones for most of my time. A great example of that, Neil, is our recent Ducks and Tucks event, which is always fun. And for those of you who don't know out there, we bring the guys together at the Hilton Anaheim. They cook with local chefs. They raise a bunch of money for the Anaheim Ducks Foundation. It's really, truly one of the greatest CR events every year. I always look forward to it. And this year I thought, you know what, Snapchat's going to be the perfect place to take this and elevate it. Our Snapchat, and I hopefully don't come across as bragging here, but I think that Snapchat story that night was incredible. I mean, it was awesome. We had some great behind the scenes stuff. The guys were into it. They were seeking me out to take Snapchat selfies and to get involved with it. We had Cabby from TSN who wanted to get involved, so we threw him on a few things, and it really showed how interactive that platform can be. And all of our players love Snapchat, and they're reacting to it, and they want to be involved with it. So obviously, it's a good one to have there, and especially for those CR events when the guys are loose, they're more relaxed. It's not a practice or a game. You know, they can show off that other side, and Snapchat's that perfect platform, right? I mean, that's, you can do it on Twitter, you can do it on Instagram, but Snapchat just feels so much more personal. It gives it that touch of, you know, I'm there with this guy, or I'm understanding where this guy is coming from, and I love it for those things. I think that's where our Snapchat will really shine, when you have those CR opportunities and you can get the guys in a position where they're not so guarded, and that's when you can really see some gold.
Totally. I think you hit it right on the nose there. It really does especially make sense for the CR stuff when you are really telling a story. And that's, I mean, that's the jargon that Snapchat uses, of course, is stories. And there's no better platform that really does tell that story in a chronological and a fun manner, in a relatively raw manner too. So I love what the Ducks have done so far, and we'll be watching for Angels Night for sure. All right, AJ, well, I have so many more questions I wanted to ask you. We're not even going to get close to everything I wanted to talk about, but we'll have a little more fun with you coming up in our All About AJ segment. But first, we'll get to this episode's shareable stat coming right at you now.
Really enjoyed chatting with AJ. Just so many good lessons and good stories there, and fantastic stuff he's doing with the Anaheim Ducks and Honda Center. And it'll be really cool to watch what he does the rest of this season, as well as seasons to come. We'll have to watch for the next Paint It Orange campaign with this year's playoff push for the Ducks. But we'll have a little more fun with AJ, get to know him a little more in our All About AJ segment coming right up. But first, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat looks at a big theme, and that is mobile. If you work in digital and social media and sports and you haven't been thinking about mobile, well, then you might have had your head under a rock for the last several years here, as it is ubiquitous because that's where fan and consumer attention and engagement is going. And this week's shareable stat says that, well, poorly performing mobile experiences, meaning slowly loading web pages and mobile content, is really stressing out users. In fact, the stat says that mobile users saw their heart rate rise on average 38% due to stress incurred while waiting for that mobile content to load. 38% because people are stressing out about lags in mobile content. So what does that mean? Well, it means you really have to put yourself in the user's shoes, in the fan's shoes, and consider that experience. The majority of it is now happening on a mobile device. They're opening emails, they're clicking on links, they're engaging on social, they're even starting to make purchases. And if you're not providing a superior, superlative, good experience on mobile, well, you're doing it wrong. Are you sending people a link from Twitter that goes to a desktop website? Are you optimizing your emails for mobile? Are you sending links to a Ticketmaster desktop site when you should be sending it to their Ticketmaster mobile optimized URL instead? Really put yourself in the fan's shoes and consider what the experience is like for the mobile fan. Yes, there's still a lot of stuff happening on desktop. Of course, tablet traffic is a little bit unique in and of itself as well. But if you are interacting with an increasingly mobile audience and you're not treating them well, you're losing out on a lot of potential revenue and, of course, engagement and reach as well. Really, it comes down to putting yourself in the fan's shoes, taking the action that they would take. Open up that email. Click on that link on your mobile device. Click on that link from Facebook. Are you sending them to an environment that's good for them, that's going to cause them to stress as they wait for a flash video to load or another big desktop page full of banner ads to load over the course of 1, 2, 3 minutes that feels like a lifetime for a mobile user? Because if you are, you're doing it wrong, and it's time to reconsider. The fact is, if you are causing mobile users' heart rates to rise on average 38%, well, you're not exactly creating a good environment for positive engagement and, of course, revenue-producing activity. So think about this week's shareable stat, and that is that if 38% is the average increase in heart rate for mobile users due to slowly loading mobile content and mobile web pages. So that's this week's episode's shareable stat. Think about it, consider it, ponder it, and ultimately take action on it. Time to start designing for a mobile-first world, and if you're not doing that, you are well behind and stressing out your fans and consumers as a result. All right, we'll have a little more fun with AJ. We'll not stress too much, and this will have no trouble loading easily on your mobile device, as we're all about audio on the podcast. And we'll be right back with more with AJ Mandariccio, social media producer for the Anaheim Ducks and Honda Center.
All right, that was this episode's shareable stat. Now we're right back with AJ Mandariccio, the social media producer for the Anaheim Ducks. Had a great conversation before. And AJ, you have survived your interview. Are you now ready to hit up the All About AJ segment?
Let's do this thing.
All right, starting off. We just actually talked about this. Number one, do you ever miss the broadcasting side of it?
A bit, yeah. I mean, I really enjoy doing play-by-play with the crunch. I enjoy getting in front of the camera and delivering the news, and Frenchie is a great guy, and Steve Carroll and obviously Johnny are all great guys, so I miss it, but we've got some good pros here in Anaheim, some really good guys, and it's going to be tough to get past them, but we'll see.
I include this little bonus question. Any fun Steve Carroll stories or stories that he likes to tell? He's just a fun guy.
God, that guy's a riot. I love Steve Carroll. He's a really, just a down-to-earth, a great guy, and most of his great stories revolve around some sort of crazy eating contest.
Yes.
That guy can eat. He's done a good job now to scale it back. He's getting a little bit older in age, so he's trying to watch the belly. But he's just great. And I think the favorite thing is he's really big into puns. So my colleague Kyle Shohara has started to take him on head-to-head in pun battles. And so it's every day. Sometimes it's nonstop and it's ridiculous, but there have been some times where we've been crying laughing as Bruce is walking up just at a pun battle that was 2 or 3 minutes. So Steve's a good guy.
Oh, that's fantastic. My favorite always, too, was if I were to miss, 1 second of a scrum or even come out a little late, Steve would deadpan, you miss Bruce. And I'd be like, you're full of it. All right, number two for you, AJ. We just talked about this also. The best quote in the Ducks locker room currently is who?
I got to give to Ryan Kesler. He's really a great guy. He always understands the situation. And no matter what question is asked, he always gives the intelligent answer. You know, he can take a question from a reporter and turn it into something the reporter didn't even ask about, but it's the right answer. I mean, earlier this year, the reporters were going at him about us not playing well, and he said, well, the reason why it's not fun to come to the rinks is because of you guys. And I think he knows when to put the pressure on himself and take that pressure on. He knows when to be lighthearted, and he's been great.
Very thoughtful, very smart guy, and definitely a very talented guy on camera. He has his own kind of in-house show as well. He does a great job on with you guys.
Between two Zams, it's a hit.
All right, number 3-4. I'm always interested in this question for folks that run digital and social for teams. Your most memorable tweet in your time with the Ducks?
We've had so many. We've had so many great moments since I've been there. You know, I could go to the Tamu night and talk about that. I can go to, I can go to so many big wins, but I think the biggest one, the one I remember the most, was last year, Game 5 against Calgary. At home, going to overtime, we're sitting there, we're all on the edge of our seats, and, you know, they say no cheering in the press box, but, you know, we're the way that we're situated is the team all sits together. So we're hooting and hollering a bit, and then, you know, coming in, just Perry in the front, doing what he does best, getting buried. When he scored that goal, I literally jumped out of my seat with my hands up in the air, and I was tackled by your former boss, my current boss, Adam Brady, tackled to the floor of the press box, just in sheer joy. And I stand up, and before I even know what I'm doing, all caps, you know, I'm tweeting Anaheim Ducks goal, Scorey Perry. And to tell you, I don't even remember what the entire tweet said, but it was just that experience, that pure joy that you felt in that moment. And what you could, you know, relay via social media, everybody felt that same joy. And they say, you know, you're supposed to be this monotone robot in the press box and you can't have any emotions. But when something like that happens for an organization, you're part of it. Oh, man, that's it, right? That's what we all look for. And, you know, we want to end with a 35-pound trophy and us tweeting that we won the Stanley Cup. But those moments along the way, I'll remember that forever.
Oh, and being able to really convey and experience that emotion with thousands of other fans simultaneously, just it's such a powerful experience, and really really makes you feel lucky to be in the job that you're in. That's fantastic. All right, number 4 for you. So in addition to the Ducks, you get to cover a lot of Honda Center events from the social side as well. So tell me the most memorable Honda Center event you've covered so far in your time there.
I was at the Foo Fighters concert this year as a ticketed guest, but Tracy and Lauren and some of the people from the Honda Center helped me out and gave me a little behind-the-scenes tour, and it was awesome. I mean, just I didn't get to meet Foo Fighters, but I love Foo Fighters, and so getting to see how their show was set up and seeing some of the backstage stuff, their instruments, you know, everything else. And then when I got in the crowd, you know, I knew I wasn't working, but I said, you know what, let me try and do some stuff and see if I can get some good stuff for them, because they'd helped me out. And one of the videos I put up on social was him just rocking out on, the Dave throne with all the guitars and everything. And just to be in the crowd for that experience more than have a press pass and work it was amazing. And know that I then had the platform to share that with some fans out there of Honda Center was truly incredible.
Oh, it's so cool. And there's so many unique events that come through there that you get to be a part of. Everything from Foo Fighters to, of course, the lovely couple of weeks in the summer when the circus comes to town.
Everybody loves the circus.
Oh, yeah. Number 5 for you, AJ. Your favorite social media campaign or contest you've done with the Ducks, and why?
I got to say Painted Orange. We touched on it in the earlier segment. It's just to see the fans and the way that they react and the way that they've taken ownership of this and the way that they rally around our team. You know, I think we're going to make the playoffs, and I think we're going to get in there, and we're going to see an even better response this year. You know, Orange County is starting to love the Ducks. They're starting to own the Ducks, and every time we do Painted Orange stuff, I am shocked at the amount of people who come to the events, who turn everything orange, who go crazy for this. It's truly great to see our fans responding the way they do and taking ownership of Painted Orange.
And to see all the content that people produce around it, and just, you know, dressing up or painting their house or their car, and that's where you can't put an ROI on that. For a fan, you know, posting that stuff, evangelizing for the team, that's tremendous, and you guys have done a great job executing that campaign. All right, number 6 for you, AJ. Which social media platform consistently performs the best for the Ducks?
It's all different, to be honest with you. You know, we have the biggest numbers on Facebook, obviously, but we have some of the most engagement on Twitter. Snapchat is really starting to bite into that, right, and take its own share of our market. And, you know, everyone sort of interacts differently with our fan base there. And you see the split. You know, for the older crowd, I think Facebook is fantastic. They love it. You know, my parents love Facebook. They'll tell me about it all the time. But my parents will hop on Twitter and see that. So, you know, each platform kind of brings its own engagement and the way that you're supposed to use it. With that comes challenges. With that comes rewards. And it's really great to see how we can utilize each one and leverage it to make sure our fans are getting the most out of each platform.
And do you find in the short amount of time you guys have been kicking ass on Snapchat, is there a lot of two-way engagement? Are fans snapping back at you, or is it only when you really ask for those?
You know, we've limited the snap backs just because, you know, the presence is always there to potentially get some snaps we have to look at that are just not going to be not suitable for work, let's say. And I don't want the Anaheim Ducks getting screen grabbed on something like that. But, but yeah, you know, we're dealing with that. A lot of it's been the one-way communication. But, you know, our fans during Ducks and Tucks, right, they said, hey, Anaheim Ducks, you need to get us Hampus and Ricky on Snapchat. We need to see what the boys look like tonight. So I was like, you know what? All right, let's get them on there. I think there's a selfie with Freddie in the background. It was screen grabbed like 200 or 300 times. It was wow. Incredible. So yeah, it was. They'll dictate for sure, and we'll try and help them out as best as they can. You know, we've heard the complaints and the constructive criticisms, as I like to put it, about what we can do better, and you know, we make sure we try and get that into the platform.
I love that. The most powerful word in social media. Listen, love it. All right, number 7 for you. Your number one tip for someone that wants to be a social media and sports pro?
I think that this breaks down to three parts, and it was told to me by somebody, and I forget who, but the first one is if you want to work in sports and social media especially, you need to be able to work longer hours than every single one of your friends. You need to be willing to make less money than every single one of your friends. And you need to be willing to move far away from all those friends. You know, I moved across the country away from my family and friends for this opportunity, and I work more hours than most of them, and I'm sure most of them make a little more than I do, but you know, it's certainly a labor of love, and you need to love what you're doing, and you know, it's not always going to go right, and there's going to be mistakes along the way, and you're going to do things that you think are awesome, and they're not going to work, but if you hold those three tenets true, and you know that, you know, you're doing something you love, then it's not really work, right? In the end, it's fun, and sports is fun. You're supposed to have fun with it. You're not an accountant, you know, you're working for a sports team.
Most often when you can look up and the crowd is cheering and the motion's flying and tears are streaming or fans are screaming that, and you realize you're at work. It's hard. It makes all the time worth it for sure. That's great. All right. Number 8 for you. Your number one tip for an effective sports team, social media presence, and why you think that is.
I think we just talked about it. You need to listen. Every sports organization needs to listen from the biggest of the big, you know, the Yankees and Manchester United down to an ECHL team out there. You need to listen to what your fans want. You need to tailor your content to them, and you need to engage with them as well. You need to listen and engage, listen and engage. It's a great back and forth that if you're doing those things the right way, you're going to find success no matter what platform you jump on.
Very good. Yeah, I think it seems so simple, yet so many don't do it. And it's great to hear from you that the Ducks certainly are listening to all those fans, engaging with them. I always love this one. You've been to a lot of NHL cities. You traveled a little bit with the team as well. Of course, spent some time back at around the Prudential Center with the Devils. So tell me the NHL city with the best food and what you eat there.
You know, I got to say, Calgary had really good food, but you got to go with Chicago, right? I mean, Chicago was fantastic. You know, not to put down New York in my home state. I love the pasta, and, you know, I love everything in Jersey and the pizza for sure. But you go to Chicago, and you're getting deep dish one night. Then the next night, you're off to some great Italian restaurant. And then all of a sudden, you're just getting, like, really good barbecue, which I found in Chicago, which blew my mind. I was like, what? Barbecue in Chicago? Where is this from? So Chicago is a little bit of everything, and not to mention, you know, you got Goose Island out there too, and I consider myself a bit of a beer snob. So the beer is good, and the food is good, and I didn't think I'd like deep dish pizza, but after going to Chicago last year, I got to say I'm hooked.
Jeez, so they got great food, and they got the Blackhawks. The Ducks better take them down a notch in the playoffs this year.
That's the goal.
All right, last one for you, AJ. A fun one to go out on. So you went to Syracuse and got your master's there. So tell me, react to one of these two things, because I love this. The whole superiority complex, or everyone that went to Syracuse for journalism, or the association of Scranton and having to hear back and forth about the office in Dunder Mifflin.
Well, hey, not every alumni can boast that, you know, Bob Costas went there, Mike Tirico went there, all these great people, and, you know, be the number one rated journalism school. But Scranton was fun. I have actually a story about this. My sophomore year, NBC comes out. They do a office convention weekend. They bring everybody but, you know, the big three out. They're all in Scranton for the weekend. They're having a great time. And I walk up, walking up campus on a Saturday morning, a family stops me and they go, "Hey, we're here for the office convention. Are you a student here?" I was, "Yeah, yeah." "Hey, can you tell me where the office is?" And I said, "There's plenty of offices. Which one are you looking for?" They go, "No, the office, the actual office." And I said, "Like, you mean the building that actually where they film?" And they're like, "Yeah, yeah." And I said, "You know, they don't film it here." Like, "No, they do. Like, we know we saw the sign and we drove in. They're in Scranton." And so I knew I wasn't going to win. So I said to them, "All right, well, hop in your car, go down this street, make a right, down three lights, make a left. You're going to see a big building. That's not it. You got to keep going." I don't know where I sent them. I sent them on probably a chase, but yeah, I mean, we owned the Scranton.
Oh my!
Everything from the office, and I have T-shirts that say "Ain't no party like a Scranton party." So hey, we owned it. They wrote a show about little Scranton, Pennsylvania. So you can't shy away from that.
Oh, I'm so glad that I decided to ask that question. That is a tremendous story. Thank you so much for telling it.
You're welcome.
All right, AJ, you delight us with your All About AJ segment. Your chance now to shout out someone on Twitter, most likely, or whoever they are, and tell us who they are and why they're worth following.
Yeah, and this isn't going to be the social media guy, but one of the big ones I love following is Dave Lozo. He used to be a writer for hockey. Now he's sort of a writer for everything, I guess. his Twitter game, as the kids call it, is strong. I mean, he's really funny. He's great with the witty one-liners. He, he really has a knack for taking the biggest story of the day in sports and presenting it in a humorous way. And I think humor is so tough to hit on Twitter, where every single person is just trying to rip you a new one for something you put out, you know. And for him to do it and to do it effectively, I just really think he's so good, and he gets it. And you don't see too many people getting it on the platform these days, and he does. You know, he can balance really great sports commentary with funny stuff about cats and pizza. And so I think it's a good one to follow if you're a general sports fan and you want something a little bit different than the norm.
Yeah, definitely going on. I do remember him well from his hockey days, and always good to be able to learn from someone who's doing it and doing it well across sports. And how about yourself? Where can we find you, as well as all things Anaheim Ducks and Honda Center across digital and social?
Well, if you feel like following, it's at AJ Mandericchio on Twitter. I'd appreciate the follow. As Neil told you before, you'll get some good hockey stats, I think. You'll get some solid commentary. And, you know, every now and then I like to put up something funny or something embarrassing and keep the people at home guessing. But the big thing is hopefully you guys will follow the Ducks after this, and you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, and Instagram at Anaheim Ducks. You know, like the Facebook page, like us on Instagram and Twitter. And then if you're interested in the Snapchat, it's NHL Ducks. It's capital N, capital H, capital L, capital D, and then lowercase the rest of the way for Ducks. We're new on there. You know, we're experimenting. We love it. And as I said, you know, follow along. You know, hit us with a mention. Tell us what we can be doing better. And certainly it's something we always like to see.
And we know you guys will be listening on the other end. It's been fantastic speaking with you, AJ. Thank you so much for your time. We know it's in the middle of the hockey season, and the Ducks are in the heat of a playoff race in the West. And we really appreciate you sharing your knowledge, your passion, and coming on the podcast this evening.
Hey, anytime you need somebody to talk for an hour, I'm your man.
And make sure to tell Brady and Kyle and the old crew I say hello.
Will do.
And go Ducks. Thanks again, AJ.
Thank you, Neil.
Just tremendous stuff with AJ Mandericchio, social media producer for the Anaheim Ducks and Honda Center. Really a great guy, sharp, doing some fantastic stuff for Honda Center and the Anaheim Ducks. Lucky to have him there, and really dipping his toes in all facets of the organization, which is really what a social media producer should be doing. Have their finger on the pulse and helping everyone to amplify all their activities. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. As always, I'm your trusty host, Neil Horwitz. Would love to hear any feedback from you on Twitter at NJH287. And of course, please do check out the website for other content and old episodes of the podcast at dsmsports.net. We'll see you next time. Until then, Enjoy your sports, enjoy your social, and talk to you soon on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.